Everyone, thanks for coming. This is probably the best attended Haven Center event in quite a while. I want to once again thank the Haven Center Director Eric Onwright, Patrick Barrett, Kate McCoy, I don't see her, there she is, for all your exceedingly fine hospitality. And this is a series, as you know, of lectures and discussions that we've had with the general topic of Latino history and politics. And our speaker for today, Raquel Rivera, fills that bill quite well, because Raquel's work is precisely at the intersection between music and Latino history and anthropology and African-American history and anthropology, particularly in the United States. Raquel is a researcher at the Center for Puerto Rican Studies, Centro de Estudios Puertorriqueños, at Hunter College in New York City. Her areas of scholarly interest are popular music and culture, race and ethnicity, nation and diaspora, and the intersection between Latino and Africana studies. She got her PhD from the Graduate Center at the City University of New York, and is the author of New Yorkers in the Hip Hop Zone, a book that some of you here, along with me and with Professor Ben Marquez, have been discussing in a class. She has just now come out with a co-authored volume, put a plug for it, called Reggaeton. She co-authored it with Wayne Marshall and Deborah Pacini Hernandez. It's actually co-edited, I'm sorry, with these two authors. She is a freelance journalist, and her articles have been published in various magazines and newspapers. Among these, Vibe, One World, Urban Latino, and El Diario La Prensa, El Nuevo Día, and the San Juan Star in the island of Puerto Rico. Singer-songwriter. She is a member of a Puerto Rican bomba group called Alma Moyo, and a founding and former member of Boricua Roots music group Yerba Buena, and the women's musical collective Yaya, or Yaya, dedicated to Puerto Rican bomba and Dominican salves. Today's talk will be on reggaeton socio-sonic circuitry from Jamaica and New York to Panama, Puerto Rico, and beyond. Now, there are two more activities associated with Raquel's visit this week. She'll be here until Thursday. Tomorrow at 4 p.m., she will speak on New York bomba, Puerto Ricans, Dominicans, and a bridge called Haiti. That'll be at 4 p.m. in 8417 Social Science. And for those of you who have a hard time locating, as many people do, that room, you have to go up on the sixth floor, which is the entry level. You go all the way back to the elevator and go two flights up. And then she will have an open seminar on Thursday, right before she leaves to return to New York, at 12:20 p.m., and this is in 8108 Social Science. And it's an opportunity to talk with her in a more intimate setting about many of the issues she'll be broaching in the two talks. So without further ado, please help me welcome Raquel Rivera.
Extremely happy to be here. I'm very pleased with the turnout, and I hope that my talk will be interesting and hopefully will generate many comments, questions. That's the part that I love best. So I am going to give a presentation, but I definitely look forward to comments from you at the end. There's cards with the book information being passed around. Are there any more left, or is there a pack somewhere? Did they all go? I'm just trying to make sure that they went around. Great. So the title of this presentation is Reggaeton Sociosonic Circuitry, and that's a term. Let me tell you a little bit about the background, the story about the book. After I published what was my dissertation, New Yorkers from the Hip Hop Zone, turned it into a book, I was feeling a little burnt out on the popular culture theme, and I wanted to work more with other genres of music, namely bomba, Dominican palos, young people in New York City that are engaged in these neo-traditional genres. But somehow, I just kept getting pulled back because there was a really huge need. I was teaching at Hunter College and later at Tufts in 2004, 2005, and 2006, and that's when reggaeton was really gaining a lot of exposure internationally. So teaching classes on Puerto Rican culture, Latino communities in New York, it was really important to discuss reggaeton, and there was hardly any literature that I could have the students read. And while I was at Tufts University as a postdoctoral fellow, I was co-teaching a class with Deborah Pacini-Hernandez, who became one of my co-editors. The class was called Music, Blackness, and Caribbean Latinos. And without a doubt, when the topic turned to reggaeton, that was the best part of the class. There was so much interest and so much need from the students that we decided that we had to do something about the lack of scholarship, and then decided to come out with this volume. And eventually, we incorporated one more person into the editorial collective, Wayne Marshall. And I'm so happy that we're both very happy that he became part of the editorial collective, because he's an ethnomusicologist, and he's a graduate of this place as well. And he graduated in 2007. And he's also a DJ and producer. So he is very well acquainted with hip-hop, with reggae, with reggaeton, and had a musical language that Deborah, and as an anthropologist, and me as a sociologist, we try as best we can, but just those three areas of expertise is coming together worked out really well. And that phrase, reggaeton sociosonic circuitry, was actually a phrase that Wayne came up with, because one of the issues that we were most interested in discussing is the fact that narratives about reggaeton's origins usually rely on this nation-based historical narrative. So the argument is usually, did it start in Puerto Rico or did it start in Panama? And then where did it go from there? Usually thought about in linear terms. But what we were grappling with is, okay, so how to explain, how to talk about a genre that has traveled all these circuits that are not linear, and it's all these overlapping circuits that touch each other in many different places. So that image of the sociosonic circuitry really helped us think how we were going to approach the book. It was surprisingly hard to get articles for the book. We thought that a lot of young scholars would be working on this and ready to publish articles, but it was really, really difficult. And we were particularly surprised that we got a lot of submissions in terms of reggaeton in Cuba, and reggaeton is really big in Cuba, so it's great that people wanted to cover that, but as usually happens in Latin America, Cuba generates all this enthusiasm and has a cultural cachet that unfortunately other places that are actually more important in terms of the discussion of reggaeton history don't have. So we had nothing on Panama. We had to look up and down for articles on Panama, and eventually what we got were two really good interviews with two important figures in early Panamanian reggae, El General and Renato, but the only article that we were able to get our hands on was a journalistic article published in German. What's the magazine? I forget the name of the magazine right now. So we had to translate the article from German and that's the article on Panama. It's good, short, simple, but I bring this up to highlight how much more work needs to be done. That's just the beginning, and that's the only thing we could find on Panama. Another aspect that we had a really hard time covering was Dominicans in reggaeton. In all these nation-based narratives, the place of Dominicans wasn't really being covered. So Deborah Pacini Hernandez, who has written a lot about Dominican music, she was like, well, I guess I'll have to write it. And she wrote a really good article on Dominicans in reggaeton that not only highlights Dominicans in the Dominican Republic, Dominicans in the United States, but also the role of Dominicans in Puerto Rico. And for those of you who have read my book, New Yorkans from the Hip Hop Zone, where I argue that if Puerto Ricans and African Americans were sharing the same neighborhoods, the same schools, and making music together, then we need to think about hip hop as a co-authored kind of cultural expression. She, Deborah, makes the same argument in terms of reggaeton. If in poor neighborhoods in Puerto Rico was where reggaeton came about, then it's impossible to speak about reggaeton in Puerto Rico without speaking about Dominican immigrants and their children in Puerto Rico. So those are some of the issues that come up in the book. So this is a very provocative quote by John Caramanica that came out in The Village Voice. The title of the article was Grow Them Bow. It was really a celebratory piece about reggaeton. But towards the end, he throws in this really interesting observation. Fuck a Slim Shady, hip-hop's race war begins here. So this was after Gasolina. This is once reggaeton is really big. So he's suggesting that the tensions in hip-hop are not really black and white. They're really about Latinos and African Americans, and reggaeton becomes a stand-in for Latinos, and hip-hop becomes a stand-in for African Americans. So that definitely tells a lot about how lines of community get drawn in terms of actual existing communities, and then how that translates into musical expression. And around the same time, I don't know how many of you know blogger Byron Crawford. He loves to make trouble. He usually says things that are really over the top. So take this with a grain of salt. The title of this post in XXL, the online version, was Ban Reggaeton, Fight the Real Enemy of Hip Hop. So he's explaining, you know, reggaeton is getting really big, and quote, I haven't heard much uproar about this from the hip hop community. But I read somewhere recently that the reggaeton station in New York has overtaken the hip-hop station in the ratings. This would seem a rather monumental development, no? And then he goes on to note, if this reggaeton garbage can knock rock music off the radio, what's there to suggest it can't replace hip-hop as well? In a city like New York, where half the black people are actually Hispanic anyway, who would even give a shit? So with all the over the topness of the way he writes, he actually brings in this perception and reality of, okay, so reggaeton stands in for Latinos, but wait a minute, in certain parts of the country like New York, half of those people are black anyway. So really, where are the lines of community? If some Latinos are black, then what does this mean for this hip hop versus reggaeton tension? So articles like these were coming out a lot in 2006. And part of the reason for all this attention that reggaeton was generating is that in a year, 2005, where overall music sales were declining, according to the Nielsen SoundScan, so overall album sales declined 8% in the first 6 months of 2005, but Latin albums sales grew 18%. So in this industry desperate to figure out ways to sell, reggaeton became identified as the hope in the music industry, and particularly in terms of Latin music. There was all this expectation that reggaeton was going to provide all these revenues. Let's see, where are we? Okay, so we're still here. So what ended up happening is, and many of you that follow reggaeton know this, all these radio stations suddenly became reggaeton-only stations under the Herbin format. Wu-Tang Latino came about, Rock La Familia came about. So there was all this expectation that reggaeton was going to be the next big thing. However, by 2006, reggaeton hadn't really delivered. So folks started grumbling, and what's happening, and Wu-Tang Latino closed down, and Rock La Familia closed down, and a lot of those reggaeton-only stations then switched around to a more Latino-wide pop format. So bachata urbana and hip hop and salsa, merengue, everything then started being played. Do you have, yes?
Rock La Familia and whatever else you said, are those radio stations?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. These were like imprints of record labels.
Okay, got it.
Right. So those two, I'm sorry if, so there's the radio stations that I'm using as an example, and then there's these record label like sub sections, which opened up and then closed down within a year and a half or so. So that's when in all these major media outlets like the New York Times and the Village Voice, LA Times, the same places that had celebrated reggaeton as the next big thing, suddenly, for example, the LA Times had an article titled, "Is reggaeton running out of gasolina?" So people were starting to wonder, okay, is it over for reggaeton? Is that it? And I want to quote Leila Cobo. She did an article in Billboard in January 2007, where she explains what happened. According to her, it's not that reggaeton was over, it's just that there were these really high expectations that it failed to meet, and then it kind of leveled off and it stayed there. Okay, so she says, those 2005 numbers were misleading, inflated by overly ambitious shipments of reggaeton releases. The numbers plunged during the first 6 months of the year, meaning 2006, when returns started coming in and factors like gasoline prices and immigration issues cut into Latin music sales. So I think that gives a good perspective on, okay, reggaeton is not dead. It could be soon, but it's not dead yet. It kind of just found a niche, and it's been working it there. So let's go on to the issue of naming and spelling, which I think is important to bring up. We chose to spell reggaeton, as you see in the first instance, for many reasons. Partly because that's the way that even in many reggaeton releases coming out of Puerto Rico, the accent wasn't being used. And also, the fact that it was crossing over into the international realm. Also for the purposes of our anthology, which is in English, we were like, okay, we don't really need the accent. However, we decided that the contributors to the anthology could spell it any way they wanted. So then in our book, we have reggaeton without the accent, reggaeton with the accent, reggaeton using actually obeying Spanish orthographic rules, which would be the third instance, G-U-E-T-O, accent on the O. And we even have R-E-G-E-T-O-N, which really in Spanish you would spell it reggaeton. However, a contributor that wrote about Cuba, reggaeton in Cuba, that's the way she saw it spelled in one of the compilations that she bought on the street. So she said, no, if that's the way it's circulating, I insist that's the way I want to spell it. So we were like, okay, given all the different ways that we have in the book of spelling it, that would be absolutely fine. So we kept it like that. But there's a really interesting controversy related to this. At this point in time, most Spanish language media outlets use the G-U-E-T-O, accent on the O, and spelling. And there is actually something called Real Academia. Yeah, there's the Real Academia de la Lengua Española, but I want to bring up the Academia Puertorriqueña de la Lengua Española, which is an organization in Puerto Rico that wants to make the recommendation to the Real Academia Española that the next edition of their dictionary include an entry for reggaeton spelled as in the third instance right there. And what I want to bring up is that, though yes, that abides by proper Spanish orthography, we don't spell reggae in Spanish as reggae, right? So because much of my work has been interested in exploring how the connections between people of the African diaspora and people defined as Latinos, often there's this break that happens. Personally, I worry that the reggaeton spelled like this breaks even more with this trajectory that comes from the English-speaking Caribbean. But ultimately, folks will spell it however way they want. And it's kind of tricky. You know, do you privilege history over actual Spanish orthographic rules? Take it as you may. Okay, so one thing is how you spell reggaeton, right? But another thing is, like, what is reggaeton? Where did it start? When does it start? And that's where that argument that I told you about earlier, is it Puerto Rican or is it Panamanian, as simplistic as it is, I mean, it's similar to arguments about other genres, and salsa has had that same argument. Is it a New York phenomenon? Is it a Puerto Rican phenomenon? Is it Cuban? So same thing happens with reggaeton. And I put up these here because these are terms that in the 1990s were used in Puerto Rico to describe what eventually became named as reggaeton. So it was called interchangeably rap, underground, dembow, melaza, and reggae. So releases of that time, album releases of that time, would use any of those terms. And in the recording themselves, all those terms were used. These terms here, well, actually, reggae en español was also used to refer to reggae in Spanish in Puerto Rico, but these terms are more common in Panama. So reggae en español, plena, which then causes all this confusion for Puerto Ricans because plena is a completely different genre in Puerto Rico, but Panamanians call reggaeton, aka reggae en español, plena. And there's a style of plena called gutro that's very important to think about this because those are the realms that people are arguing, okay, reggaeton comes from 90s underground music in Puerto Rico. And other folks say, wait a minute, if reggaeton español was actually happening in Panama in the 80s, what do you mean that reggaeton comes out of Puerto Rico? So to give a little bit, it's really frustrating to talk about music without listening to music. So what I propose to do, before I show you a clip of that documentary, I want to use a quote from Vico C, who many of you know is one of the Rap en Español big figures who started in the late mid-80s and still is active today. He was quoted by Raquel Cepeda in a Village Voice article explaining what reggaeton is, and he says, musically, reggaeton was born in a hip-hop environment with a little bit of Jamaican dancehall and Puerto Rico's own tropical flavor and ritmo. And according to Vico C's experience, that would make sense. He started doing hip-hop, and then he became acquainted while living in Puerto Rico with the Jamaican reggae, with Panamanian reggae. So for him, it's basically hip-hop, throw some reggae in, throw in some other influences, and then you have reggaeton. However, in the experience of many other folks, especially folks in Panama, that doesn't make sense. What do you, especially if we listen for the sound that is the most basic sound in reggaeton, the bow, what's hip-hop about that? That's dancehall reggae. So there's a lot of controversy. What exactly is reggaeton? So there's this documentary that came out last year. How many of you have seen it? Straight out of Puerto Rico. Even though The Chosen Few builds itself as the first documentary on reggaeton, I have to say that that's more like a promo for the artists in the label. So it tells an interesting story, but a very limited story. And even though this documentary has its own set of drawbacks, I would say that's properly said the first documentary on reggaeton that has been done. So let me switch over to this. Wait. Let me do the microphone. Yeah, pardon the low tech.
Reggaeton started in Panama. They took the dancehall sound, they took the reggae sound, and they added Spanish language to it. A lot of songs that reggaeton have done. Reggaeton have done over, but not the same words, but just with the same melody, with the same with a Spanish guy.
Listen, oh, I am the word, you know.
12 and 13 years old. I'm from Panama, and I do Spanish really. And Luis El General, which was the first reggaeton rapper, he combined the influence of the Jamaican tempo with the Panamanian interpretation and the Panamanian soul. When those two things combined, hip-hop in Spanish in Puerto Rico, and what the Panamanians were doing with reggae, the kids just latched onto that. And that sound that came out of Puerto Rico was rapping on top of it. Well,
wait, that's driving me crazy. How did you even
move that? Move the speaker. Move the speaker the other way.
Thank you. Can you hear it back there? Okay, great.
I don't think that fixes it. I'm also
then
picking up tons of static.
Can you hear?
But it was
yeah. Okay, great.
Underground pretty much meant that it wouldn't get airplay because the radio stations didn't want to play it. They said, this is not for radio, this is not music, this is garbage. Because everything was just underground. They were talking dirty, they were talking everything.
And I could talk about girls' asses, and I could talk about fucking, and I could talk about shooting somebody in the head, and I could talk about slamming drugs, and I could talk about whatever I want to talk about, because you know what? That's our shit. That's our music.
So if you don't have a radio station that wants to play the angry, raw reggaeton, then the movement has to come up from the ghetto. The movement has to come up from the people that want to spread the word without having the normal channels of promotion and communication with this radio, TV, whatever.
So notice that they're rhyming over hip-hop, right? Mm-hmm. So this is early reggaeton. Okay, so I want to go back to something that the writer from Jamaica, I forget his name, but he was saying that basically the first reggae en español hits were translations of Jamaican hits. And not precisely because they were direct translations. The more important thing was that it sounded like the original, not necessarily that it meant the same as the original. So I have here two examples. So first is El General, who's one of the founding reggae en español artists of Panama. And this is one of his big hits from the early 90s.
Porque yo llego al general, tu pum pum, mami no me, bang mata 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 después, tu pum pum no me puede matar, ay mamacita porque soy yo que le dan, digo que a la puerta te digo que a la puerta san, tu pum pum digo se va a destirar, digo todos los hombres lo van a correr, pum.
Okay, so keep that sound in mind, right? And for those of you that know Jamaican dance hall, listen to this one.
Now come on, tell your friend that you want to know the cool on the kid and don't come again. Over. Say number one. Ooh,
boom boom nani nani woulda. Kill me this boom boom nani nani woulda. Run me with me nani 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 woulda. Kill me this boom boom nani nani woulda. Run me with the drum and I'll stop for a minute till me drop dead. So this is where it gets complicated. In these nation-based narratives of reggaeton history, because if what you're doing is just switching, I mean, in this case, the theme is love of vaginas in both songs. So there is the same theme in this case. So if you're taking the same theme, the same sound, is it a new genre? Why are we not saying reggaeton started in Jamaica? Even if it's in a different language. So this is where these nation-based narratives get a little complicated. So where's the cutoff point, or where's the beginning? And I personally am not interested in saying it started in Jamaica. I actually think that we should take into account that without Jamaica, there would be no reggaeton. Without Panama, there would be no reggaeton. Without Puerto Rico, there would be no reggaeton. And then without New York, there would be no reggaeton either, because El General was in New York recording with Jamaican producers when he became big. So New York is really important in the history of many different Caribbean genres. And this is yet another instance. I mean, from Jibaro music, Calypso, all these genres became internationally known from New York, aside from suffering a lot, not suffering as in, you know, aside from experiencing many shifts in terms of aesthetics in New York City. So good to keep in mind that these are some of the circuits that reggaeton has traveled, and it's also important to keep in mind that, I mean, those are, let's say, four places in the early history of reggaeton, but like I mentioned, now it's important to talk about Dominican Republic in terms of those circuits, Cuba, Colombia, Honduras, London. I mean, now, you know, the circuits keep getting more and more complicated. But in terms of that early history, I want to bring up the close connection that exists between Panama and Jamaica. And that's why in the 80s and 90s, the music that was coming out of there was mostly reggae-based, because a lot of immigrants from Jamaican, Barbados, and other English-speaking parts of the Caribbean migrated to Panama to help build the canal. There is this direct human cultural connection between Panama and Jamaica. So yes, reggae is big in terms of the international music industry, but there's also a direct human connection between the populations that start doing reggae in Panama and Jamaica. And the same thing happens with Puerto Rico. It's no surprise that yes, even though reggae is getting to Puerto Rico through the international music industry in the 80s, the big thing in Puerto Rico is hip-hop, because that direct link in terms of migration is between Puerto Rico and New York and other places in the United States. So while in the 80s hip-hop is big in Puerto Rico, reggae is really big in Panama, and those are kind of the influences that come together in that early reggaeton scene. And actually, I wanted to play something else for you. Well, I'll play that later on. Let's concentrate in reggae in Panama now, and I want to show you some images from the book of some of those really important folks in the early Panamanian reggae history. On the left is Rasta Nini, who is an early artist from the 70s and also a really important figure in the Rastafarian movement in Panama. And to this day, just like Gerardo Maloney, who's an important intellectual of Panama, kind of took his generation under his wings, and it was he that gave them a lot of reggae records. Rasta Nini is also like a mentor to the younger generations of reggae artists in Panama. So he's featured in our book. Another important early reggae figure is Renato. And Renato y las Cuatro Estrellas was this big group in the 80s. And El General, who became really famous with Tu Pum Pum and Te Buena, who you heard before, he was one of Renato's Cuatro Estrellas. So this is an artist before El General. Renato was big, and then came El General, who you see here. I'm hoping that you can see that it spells Panama, his hair. And this is Lady Anne, who had quite a few hits in Panama in the 90s, never attained the same kind of success as other artists like El General, but I want to play something from her anyway. Why do you have that questioning look on your?
Because I know that it's like she's speaking Creole, but maybe Panama Creole. I don't hear the Spanish in it, neither did I hear the Patois in it, so I was just wondering.
Neither. What she's doing is a play on words, kind of like pig Latin.
Yeah. That was
so she's saying apa nipi napa epe mipi no brepe, something like that. Anina es mi nombre. Exactly, the equivalent of jeringonza.
Yeah, that's the female language. Yeah, at least my sister that we.
Okay, jeringonza in Puerto Rico. Yeah, well, actually, yeah, I don't know if maybe it's more female specific in Panama. That's a really good question. But it's a way that young people especially communicate to, you know, adults don't understand. So this was a big hit, especially among young folks in Panama. And also note that she's singing over a really well-known Jamaican rhythm again. I'm sorry?
Chaklimus and Pliers made that rhythm big.
Exactly. So many of the Jamaican hit songs are based on Jamaican rhythms. And these are the artists that came out in this compilation called Reggae Español of 1991. It was actually half of the songs were by Jamaican artists and half of them were by Spanish-speaking artists from Panama, Honduras, and Nicaragua. On this upper side is the only Jamaican artist of the crew, and then the rest are either from Panama or from Nicaragua. So I want to play a little bit from the artist on the upper right-hand corner, Rude Girl La Atrevida. Man, me why me no why no woman? Man, me love me no like Batman. Man, me why me no why no woman? Man, me love me no like lesbiana. Échate y vete pa' ya lesbiana. Desvénzate, bebé, de ya lesbiana. Con un hombre tú no quieres hablar lesbiana. Con un hombre no te quieres ver ya lesbiana. Con la mujer si te vas a... So the song is titled Lesbiana, Lesbian, and it's basically all, you know, me no like no batiman, me no like no lesbian, says the same thing in English and Spanish. So similarly to many other reggae songs in English, there's this focus on saying, well, I'm against this. So another aspect of reggae that gets reproduced in reggae en español. Not as much in reggaeton. Even though in reggaeton it's more like hip-hop, that homophobia just gets thrown around casually. I mean, it's definitely part of the way that masculinity is constructed, but it's not as common to get a whole song devoted to questioning homosexuality. Okay, so I want to play, since I've been concentrating so much on reggae in Panama, I want to go over the sounds of early underground music in Puerto Rico. And this is from Playero 38, the album that made this huge scandal in Puerto Rico. 1995, the police actually went into record stores in Puerto Rico and confiscated hundreds of CDs and tapes, and this was one of their prime targets. So Daddy Yankee was part of this compilation. Ay, did I not embed this? Oh, yeah. Switches from hip hop to dance hall, and it does that. The whole recording and concerts were like that too. It would just be hip hop and reggae, hip hop and reggae. And then eventually, it's the reggae sound that dominated that scene. And eventually, that's what got branded reggaeton. But it's good to keep in mind that in that early underground scene, it was equal parts hip hop and reggae. Jump ahead a decade to 2004, and I picked this clip just as one of the many other Caribbean-based musics that came to infuse reggaeton. I'm not sure if it's vallenato or cumbia. I mess up the distinction between the two, but it's one of the two from Colombia. So the dembow beat underneath and then the cumbia or vallenato accordion on top. This would have not been possible in 1994. In 1994, there was Meren Rap that Vico C and other artists were doing, but the underground fans, they shunned that as the commercial stuff. Mm-hmm. Like the good stuff, according to that core underground scene, was straight hip hop, straight dance hall, and this other Latin tinge stuff was for commercial consumption. However, forward 10 years, and then it becomes okay to bring in salsa, to bring in bachata, to bring in vallenato, cumbia. And the last example that I want to show, I have a picture of La Sista there because you know what Daddy Yankee looks like and you know what Evie Queen looks like, but unfortunately La Sista is not as well known, so that's why I put her image there. Majestad Negroide is her debut album from 2006. She's done concerts with Tego, with Calle 13, she's done songs with Joel y Randy, so not as popular as I would hope yet, but she's definitely getting out there. And one of the many genres that get thrown around in these narrative, nation-based narratives regarding reggaeton origins, folks that really want to emphasize the Puerto Rican aspect of reggaeton, they say, oh, it comes from bomba and plena. Which is the craziest thing. Yes, there are similarities, just like there are similarities between African-derived musics of the Circum-Caribbean. So yes, there is a similarity base, but no, reggaeton doesn't come straight from plena and bomba. It comes from Jamaican dancehall. And the other interesting thing is that for all that people throw around the bomba and plena is part of reggaeton cliche. It bomba really hasn't been used that much in reggaeton. Tego Calderon has used it, La Sista has used it, and a few other artists. I have yet to hear Plena in reggaeton. There's one video with Daddy Yankee. I forget which one, but they're playing Plena at Calle San Sebastian, but you can't hear it. It's just visual. So it's interesting that even though these genres get thrown around to legitimize Puerto Rican ownership of reggaeton, really these genres haven't really been fused that much with reggaeton. This is one instance where bomba is actually used in reggaeton, and it start the drums at the beginning are barrel drums that are used in bomba. So they have a really particular sound, different from what get called congas or timbas. I'm not going to pick up a mop anymore. Ya yo encampané la escoba. I put up the broom. Mejor búscate a otra. You better get yourself another woman que te lave bien la ropa. That will wash your clothes real good. So the whole song is about saying, you know, what do you think? You go dancing, you leave me here, you know, cleaning your house. I'm done with this. Enough. And Calaboy Bambú is actually referencing a poem by Luis Palesmado. So it's a really interesting drawing on different sources that she's using here. I covered some of this, the overlapping circuits of reggaeton, and I have other things that we can listen to, but maybe what I can do is stop here and we can hopefully get into a discussion, and if the clips that I have come into the discussion, then maybe I'll play some more music. So thank you very much.